So this is a phrase you've already heard today a couple of times. Climate change, it is an important issue for the future, but it's here now. And it's here now in different regions of the United States. We cannot attribute any particular one single event to climate change. But certainly, as Alice described, we can attribute many of the basic trends that we're observing to climate change. And we can say that certain types of events are consistent with an increase in other types of increases in certain types of events is consistent with what you expect under a climate change global warming scenario. So I just wanted to highlight that sort of key result from the NCA report, which I think was sort of a pivot point in terms of communicating our understanding of climate change. Climate change is not necessarily just a faraway thing that affects faraway people, but it affects things that people here in the United States care about. And in fact, that includes national security. So John gave some excellent examples of that that I would only just reiterate here, that things like decline in Arctic sea ice, changes in coastal vulnerability, which are very regionally explicit phenomena. So we tend to think of global warming and sea level rise as being these long-term trends that affect different places more or less the same way, and that's not the case. There's a lot of regional variability, and it's very important to understand what those regional variability and changes are to really understand how those impacts are going to play out. For example, for sea level rise, the entire world is not going up at the same rate. There's coastal subsidence, where regions of the land surface are actually declining, which increases the relative rate of sea level rise in those regions. The changes in the circulation patterns in the ocean that we're observing give rise to different regional manifestations for the amount of sea level rise. Different parts of North America will experience different parts of sea level rise depending on those regional patterns. And in addition, the melting ice in Greenland and in the Arctic and in glaciers worldwide have fingerprints in terms of how they affect global sea level, because they actually affect the gravitational field of the Earth. And this can give rise to regional manifestations, different regional manifestations of sea level rise. And we need to understand all that just to give accurate sort of projections of what sea level rise might look like in different places. Climate change also has these indirect impacts that become harder and harder to tease out the full causal chain of events. Clearly, there's going to be impacts on food security, but exactly how those are going to play out, where those are going to play out, how frequently we're going to see different types of insecurity, food insecurity issues arise, is really a healthy and active research area that we're currently really trying to address through a wide range of institutions. Other examples of climate change impacts that matter for national security are things like extreme heat, which can affect training, it can affect force readiness, it can affect infrastructure, and a whole host of other issues that are really relevant to national security missions. I got more bad news. The impacts of climate change are really projected to increase. And actually, if you look at this figure on the left, I think no science of climate change talk is complete without graphs of things going up and to the right. And in this particular chart just shows two different scenarios of where we might be headed in terms of global temperature change under a couple of different assumptions about the rate at which future greenhouse emissions will rise. So the observations and the model reconstruction of historical temperature is on the left-hand side, and then you see these two lines over on the right-hand side. And I want to call your attention to two features on this graph. The first is, over the next several decades, a lot of climate change is already baked in. What matters is the emissions that we've released up until the present day. And we actually have not experienced the full range of warming due to the greenhouse gases that have been emitted to the atmosphere to date, because it takes a long time for things like the oceans to warm up and for circulation patterns to fully evolve to a state that they would be. And second point to make is there is actually a pretty wide divergence in terms of projecting where global temperatures are going to be at the end of the century. And there's two important sort of key factors affecting this. One is that our ability to project exactly how much climate change is going to occur given a certain scenario of greenhouse gas emissions is variable. There's different models that project slightly different results, and that's actually the shading that you see around each of those curves is an indication of what we think that sort of uncertainty with the sensitivity of the climate system might be to greenhouse gas emissions. But perhaps an even bigger thing that we don't know is what human societies are going to do over the next several decades in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. If we go on sort of a more business as usual type of scenario where greenhouse gas emissions continue to increase in the atmosphere, you could see a scenario play out like the A2 scenario here, which is a more rapid increase in global temperatures that continues beyond 2100. The other scenario shown here is more of a scenario with it that implies some degree of emissions reduction, where there are global actions and national actions to reduce greenhouse gas concentrations and really bring the curve down so that the ultimate degree of climate change is somewhat reduced or mitigated. And so there are some good news. Is we actually still have an opportunity to make a difference in terms of what path we're on. And I think that the military, national security community writ large can play an important role in that endeavor, as well as just in reacting to the impacts of climate change. So there are things we can do, both to manage the unavoidable, i.e. Deal with the impacts that are already baked in and that are already going to happen, as well as to manage where that ultimately that trajectory goes, and how can we reduce greenhouse gas emissions to try to avoid some of the most potentially severe consequences of climate change, both domestically and internationally. And these are just some images from the National Climate Assessment Report that show some of the steps that are described in more detail that could make a contribution to that endeavor. So the other kind of main point that I wanted to make with my remarks is trying to describe how the scientific community writ large can help not just inform where is climate change going and answering that question, but understanding what are the likely impacts of climate change in different places and for different sectors. How are they going to affect individual people, individual communities, et cetera? The graph there in the middle on the right there is from Washington State, showing a pretty significant decline in snowpack in that region. Even though most model projections show not a big change in the overall amount of precipitation for the Pacific Northwest, there are big seasonal changes, and in particular, the amount of precipitation falling in the winter in the form of snow is going to decline. More of it's going to fall in the form of rain. And this has big implications in terms of hydropower production, in terms of flood control, and in terms of dealing with salmon migration and other ecological issues in the Northwest. It also has implications for wildfire. I was actually up in the part of Washington State with my family camping 2 weekends ago, and we had to evacuate due to the forest fires. So that was an extreme environmental event that I experienced firsthand that I would not recommend to anybody. So understanding what those impacts might be, where they might be, and how they might play out through this interconnected set of variables is a really important endeavor of the science community. But we can also do a lot to inform responses to climate change. What can be done to increase the resilience of our energy systems, our water systems, our food systems, our national security apparatus writ large? What can we do to increase the security of our energy supply and other forms of, say, food security and other forms of things that make life comfortable and that make us prosperous as a nation? And also the sustainability of our energy systems, our food systems, and our other systems to understand what are the net impacts that these systems are having on the environment, and what can we do to mitigate those footprints, yet still maintain the standard of living that we all have come to appreciate. So, got more bad news, unfortunately. It isn't always easy. So the scientific community, I think, could do a better job in a number of ways in terms of informing these responses and helping decision makers, like those seated at the table up here, understand what can really be done to effectively deal with the consequences of climate change and to help deal with creating solutions. And so the first point to make here is information about current and projected future climate change is necessary but not sufficient. The loading dock approach of here's my climate data, would you like some? Isn't always that helpful in terms of really informing what matters to different decision makers. A more effective model is one that really incorporates science and decision making more holistically. And this figure is from a report I worked on in my previous life at the National Academies with a series of reports called America's Climate Choices. And this figure shows the sort of iterative scheme, sort of a risk management-based adaptive practice for incorporating climate information, identifying vulnerabilities and risks to systems at hand, and identifying opportunities and co-benefits in terms of different responses that can be incorporated to deal effectively, not just with climate change, but with all these sort of environmental trends that we're facing. The other thing that's makes this a hard problem is that many of the risks to security are in fact multifaceted and involve multiple stresses. So you really have to understand how different systems interact with one another. This is one example about health outcomes, noting that they are affected by a huge range of factors, and climate is just one of those. So it is important to not just provide climate information in a vacuum. Global temperatures going up 3 degrees, sea level rise is going up by this amount or could be this amount, but to help decision makers understand how that fits into the context of the other factors that they need to account for in their decision making enterprises. And I know that I'm hoping that Larry will touch on that in his remarks as well. So a couple final slides on things that we're doing at PNNL and that other scientists and practitioner communities are doing to help try to improve our ability to deliver that sort of actionable information to decision makers across a wide range of sectors. So first is developing data tools, modeling systems, and other ways to inform different aspects of climate change relevant to national security as well as to a host of other issues. I've listed a couple of the efforts that are going on across PNNL and in my division in particular up here. And one of the key features of a lot of these initiatives is we're really trying to understand the intersections amongst these different systems, not treating climate change in a vacuum, but really integrating the biophysical, climate, hydrology, ecological systems with an understanding of, we are a Department of Energy lab after all, energy systems. How does climate change affecting the sort of supply and demand of energy, transmission of energy under different scenarios, as well as socioeconomic systems and how those play out. There are many other labs, universities, and other groups that are doing this, and this function of working, bridging between the science community and the sort of decision-making and stakeholder communities is one that really could use a lot more attention, a lot more expertise, it isn't just a benefit to climate change, but actually improving the tools that we use to make these projections really benefits by having this interaction with stakeholders to understand what are the variables that really matter to people. As one example of the kind of output you can get from a sort of a global scale model is marrying up projections of future water demand in different parts of the world based on trends in agricultural production, energy production, population trends, with the projected water supply from climate models, is you can get a map like this that just shows sort of regional hotspots, places where it's pretty clear that something's going to have to give in terms of water stress. And this can be an important kind of result for understanding the big picture. It's also important to have higher resolution. Excuse me, the smoke from the wildfires, I guess, is still in my lungs. It's also important to have a higher resolution picture so people can really start to see, understand what changes might look like where they live. And doing this sort of work, and this is cutting edge research that we're doing at PNNL to really look at projections of water demand down to a very detailed level that really try to show what trends might look like. And this is just out a couple of decades. So this is one scenario looking out in the 2020 to 2039 timeframe under one scenario of future climate change using a particular climate model result. So the results might change, but these are sort of illustrative of the type of changes you might see in projected surface water deficit. And it helps you to understand where the hotspots might be, where it is that you might need to do more in-depth analysis, look at a broader range of scenarios to really understand what the vulnerabilities might be in those places and what can be done to adapt to those changes. I did mention we're a Department of Energy lab, so we've done quite a bit of work in terms of formulating systems that allow us to assess the sort of comprehensive impacts of climate change, extreme weather events, and other trends on both through a heat waves and through changes in water availability on the supply of electricity, on demand for electricity. And it turns out that when you get things like an extreme heat wave combined with a drought, you're actually making two things work in the wrong direction. You can reduce the capacity of power plants and thus reduce the available supply of energy at the same electricity, at the same time that you're driving up air conditioning command for residential and commercial buildings. So this is a rapid narrowing of supply and demand. And at some point, the system doesn't work anymore. And so it's really important to understand what those trends might look like in the future. And we're working with regional stakeholders who are involved in understanding what they need to do in terms of expanding their capacity, implementing efficiency programs, programs and demand response programs and those sorts of issues in order to understand how to make sure that we continue to deliver affordable, safe, secure power systems, and to do so in a way where we're really looking across a range of different scenarios in a, consistently in terms of how things play out. So if you're looking at an extreme climate change scenario, you're looking at what does the energy system look like under that kind of a scenario, so that you have an apples-to-apples kind of a comparison. Final example here is some work that we're doing at PNNL to help understand what the actual storm surge situation might be at U.S. naval installations. And this is a extremely high-resolution map. So this is, you can see where we are right here. Here's Annapolis area. And here is actually, if you've been to the U.S. Naval Academy, this is actually the sort of facility. And you can see the fine mesh of the grid here that allows us to really resolve all of the dynamical and physical processes that give rise to this, what would an actual hurricane-driven storm surge or other extreme storm event look like from a hydrological perspective at this site. And this can really help the decision makers there understand the vulnerability of their systems. So just some summary thoughts here in terms of rearticulating some of the points I've already made about climate change complicating existing threats to national security and raising new ones. We've heard the term a couple times already today about climate change being a force multiplier for the national security community. I think that additional work is needed to connect climate change research to a lot of different sectors, but national security in particular, to really understand what the key issues are and how we can better inform them. There's a lot of things that are happening that I think are relevant to this this issue, but we really need to understand how to apply these capabilities and to do so in a thoughtful way that really understands what we know, what we still need to learn, and how we can best inform those decisions. Thank you.